Hello again. You are listening to We Own This Town Music, a podcast dedicated to showcasing new and notable music from Nashville and surrounding areas. I'm your host, Michael Eads, and this is volume 158. This week, we've got ourselves a special interview episode. I sit down with Megan Lovelace and Jacob Kornfloss of Nashville's Show To Go and To Go Records. We discuss their personal history, their relationship with the city, and most importantly, the drive behind their various endeavors. Before we dive in, a quick reminder that this show is part of We Own This Town, a podcast network fueled by Nashville hosts. There's new episodes going up all the time. I really could rattle on endlessly about how great every single show is, but I'll save you from all that babbling and just implore you to hit up weownthistown.net, click on podcasts, or even just one of those handy episode covers right there on the homepage, and dive in. I know time is precious these days, but give yourself this little gift. We Own This Town music can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @WeOwnThisTown, and you can stream these episodes everywhere, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, etc. If you're listening to this on the web, go to one of those things, stream it there. Just like every podcast on the planet, I ask that you subscribe. I get no monetary kickback from such a thing, but I'd like to be in your life regularly. Please let me be that. All right, before we jump into the interview, I'm going to play some music from To Go Records. They've only released two records so far, so this will be a sampling of their complete discography. Why did I choose to interview a label that only has two releases? Because they're clearly doing something interesting. I wanted to know more about them, and what's wrong with promoting something you're intrigued by? How dare you ask that question? All right, coming up, a track from Ivan off of Little Lady Number 2, followed by a blast of punk rock from Depression Breakfast off of Just Because I'm a Woman. Then, the interview.
Yeah.
intro, and then we'll just slide right into the interview, which is happening now.
Oh,
it's sweet.
This is it.
Oh,
this
all
is
right.
The interview?
We're having the interview. So
awesome.
Wow.
We are here today with To Go Records.
Hello.
Founders. Is that the correct term?
Correct term.
All right. So let's do some very simple introductions so people know your voices.
Okay. All right. I'm Megan Loveless.
And I'm Jacob Kornfloss.
All right. So now we know who everyone is. So we're all caught up. This is great. So to begin, I think everyone needs a little context. To Go Records is a new record label in town. You have two releases officially out in the world. Is that correct?
Yes, two.
So there's Ivan, Little Lady number two, and Depression Breakfast, Just Because I'm a Woman.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if it's just because I'm a woman because it has the X and I am a white male with a beard and I don't want to say it wrong.
It is still pronounced as that.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. It's like just taking like the word man out of woman, which is cool. So they actually did all that, which is awesome. I love the title.
Yeah.
I love the title as well. I've always seen it with a Y. Not with the
I
X.
Have seen that too.
I like it with the X.
Yeah, I've seen the X a couple times. I like the X.
Yeah.
Seems it, powerful.
Innovative.
I should know this, but does it show up as an X online?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to make sure.
Right. So two recordings out. So you're a new label, but I have a suspicion that you are not new to the music scene or to the happenings around town. So our journey today will be to find out where you're from and how you got here.
Okay.
All right. So, Megan, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Where are you from?
I am from Centerville, Tennessee, which is like an hour out from Nashville. It is the middle of nowhere. But yeah, I moved to Murfreesboro several years ago to go to school, studied music business, and then moved to Nashville a year ago while I was still in school. And yeah, I've been in Nashville for a year. But I've been coming here my whole life. I've been booking shows in Nashville for several years and coming to shows here for about 4 years.
You would make the commute from your hometown into Nashville for shows?
Yes.
Nice.
So there is
an hour commute?
Yes. So it wasn't very often, but there's not much to do in Centerville, Tennessee. And if you like music, there's nothing for you. So I would make the commute. I didn't know very many underground venues or DIY venues when I first started coming, which was when I was 18. But I remember when I started college, I would go to Meal Ticket and things like that.
I don't even know what it is.
That was
you're pointing over in this direction as if I should know what Meal Ticket is.
It was a block that way.
I am old and do not attend house shows.
That was a sketchy warehouse.
It was very sketchy, but I loved that place. It was just there wasn't really a good exit, which is kind of scary.
No, and when the bands were playing, they'd have an industrial door block going on. And it was six inside. So it was just
yeah, could never breathe in there.
Yeah.
There was a golden toilet.
That's
that was awesome.
And a bidet? Possibly?
Was there?
There might have been a bidet. Someone mentioned that to
that
me the other day.
Golden? So. A golden bidet?
Possibly. That would be amazing.
That's a great album title.
Yeah. Keep that one in mind.
Yeah. So you're going to mostly DIY shows in Nashville? That's your bread and butter?
Yeah. So maybe my sophomore year of college, it was 2016, 2017, I started booking shows. Well, actually, before I started booking, I was just running door at Cold Lunch recording shows.
Mm-hmm.
So my first ever show that I ran door for was in a basement. And I can't remember what it was called, but I think it was one of the guys in Mountains Like Wax, his house. But it was Sad Baxter, Rose Hotel, Snake Chaney, and Spirit Week in a basement. But it was January, and it was very cold, so there was no heat in the basement.
Mm.
And they had no room for anyone to run door because it was so small. So I sat outside in January when it was less than 40 degrees, definitely. So that was interesting.
So we're establishing that you're a part of the local scene and you've really paid some dues already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ran door for a long time. Well, not maybe 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then I asked, I don't know if you know Caroline Bowman of Cold Lunch Recordings.
Indeed.
I went to her and I was like, hey, I would really like to start booking shows. You know, I have a good idea of all these bands in Nashville from running door, and I've met a lot of people, and that's just something I've always wanted to do. So she mentored me through it, and first show was at Little Harpeth Brewing with Boy Scott, Harlan from Memphis, and Snake Chaney, and then this band called Houseplants from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So
It was August 25th. I've somehow managed to receive the promo email from you while you were booking that show. And I was looking through my email before you came in, and there it is. Got it a solid 10 days before the event. Plenty of lead up time. Fun poster.
Yeah, Caroline actually made that poster too. But yeah, that was my first show, so I was very new to it. I was very nervous, so I probably over promoted. Pushed it.
Yeah.
But it was a good turnout. And then after that, I started booking shows like 2 to 3 times a month, if not more, which was a little too much. But yeah, really, really got me into it. I learned a lot.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get your story now.
Yeah.
All right. I've been going to shows in Nashville since I was either 13 or 14 years old.
So you're from here?
I was raised in Antioch, but
that counts.
Yeah.
That counts.
It counts.
I know, but people don't.
I'm from Franklin, and when I say I'm from Nashville, my girlfriend, who is from Nashville proper, will say, no, you're not. You're from Franklin.
Gotta correct it.
But to the outside world, if you're from Antioch, you're from Nashville.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's a lot more like Nashville was still than any other part of it now.
Yeah, very true.
But yeah, so around 13 or 14, I started going to shows around town, like going to, because I was really like, at the time, I was really like not into the idea of living here. And I was like, oh, I'll go somewhere else whenever I'm grown up and whatever. And then I started like finding, I think the first show that I went to was a Dogs of Oz show in Grayson's basement, actually. And I think I don't even know if I was 14 yet. I was definitely an eighth grader. And I remember just kind of like somehow coaxing my parents to let me do that.
Yeah.
And then going to like Jeff the Brotherhood shows at Third Man Records and like all that kind of stuff throughout middle school. And then I started high school at Nashville School of the Arts. And then I just met all these different people and I started playing in all these bands around town. Like I played in a punk band called Jaws for 5 years. I was in the original incarnation of Dreamwave. I was in the original incarnation of Soccer Mommy. And as of most recent, I'm in a band called Dancers as well.
Nice.
But yeah, I started booking shows when I was in high school, just like getting to know touring bands from just opening up for them. And they're like, you seem like you kind of know people around here. You want to like book us? And I was like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I just throughout high school playing DIY venues or even back then the end, even though there's not a lot going on there anymore.
Right.
But yeah. I remember when I started going to shows, I was so socially anxious. I like literally had such a hard time talking to people and like to a point where I would like have to go and throw up. Like,
wow.
I was so nervous because I knew no one. I knew no one there. And I was like this young kid.
You are putting your hand down to the ground as if you were 3 feet tall.
Not exactly 3 feet tall.
And I hadn't hit my growth spurt yet.
Yeah.
I was this young kid who looked my age, which was 13 and 14. And so I had to like eventually like muster up the courage and be like, hi, I'm Jacob Cornfloss. Nice to meet you. Yeah. I really like what you're doing. And then, like, since then, I've kind of just been all around Nashville doing anything musically. I run I'm not going to give the address, but I run a DIY spot called The Chili Factory myself. I used to run a DIY spot called The Somme Center as well, named after
Bridgestone.
Yeah, Bridgestone.
Used to be called, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Why won't you give out the address?
I don't want the cops to come.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you don't want like everyone to show up at your house. And then I was like, oh, no, you don't want
that. I don't
want
to get it shut down. I don't want to get evicted.
If there's any cops listening to this, turn it off.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate that. Anyway, so you're involved with the scene through playing in bands, booking bands, going to house shows, throwing house shows. How do you enjoy that house show scene? It's so foreign to me. It's so foreign and just mysterious. People will put, you know, the Chili Factory on a flyer or like Banana Tapes HQ. And I'm like, man, I really wish I knew what that was. I know what Banana Tapes is.
Ask
I don't know
punk.
Where that is.
Yeah, you got to ask a punk.
Got to ask a punk.
I'm too scared. I'm like the little you. I'm too scared to ask people.
Hey, punks are scary. I like it a lot. I mean, that's just like what I grew up in. You know, I grew up playing on floors and sleeping on floors. So I don't know. I mean, there's not a lot left of it, honestly. There are like two or three house venues.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that a little bit with both of you because it feels like you're both clearly coming from the DIY scene. I think that is a pretty powerful scene like in Nashville at the moment, but because I'm sort of peeking at it from the outside and a little late to it, like Dark Matter has a legit venue now.
Yeah, you know?
Like it's very weird to think about.
They've had multiple incarnations. They were,
I mean, they used to be a block up from here in the smallest little house you've ever seen that burnt down a month after they moved out of there.
Yeah.
Too.
So do you feel like that scene is waning, or do you feel like you're getting older and maybe getting... like me and getting cut out of it a little bit? Like there's 13 and 14 year olds.
Yeah, I've thought about both of those options.
Because you're not going to shows where 13 and 14 year olds are going.
That's true. I don't know. It's like there's so many venues that shut down and there's so many venues that are created. It's just like keeping up with all of that. But I really do feel like there are less house shows, and it may be, I don't know if it's because the Nashville scene has changed so much with, I don't know. I've thought about this a lot, actually, and I can't put my finger on it.
Do you think it's from the big fire that happened in Oakland?
Yes.
That changed all those rules?
That's also like when everything started shutting down. Dark Matter shut down. Meal Ticket shut down.
And Glass Menage all in the same night.
So I feel like that was honestly probably like where all of it started shutting down, and there's probably not as much because of that. Because it was pretty lax on the rules. Like there weren't rules.
Yeah.
So
right. Yeah. You earlier described being trapped inside of an industrial room.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. There's nothing fire safe about that.
Right. Like legitimately dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, no one really thought about that until Oakland fires happened. So yeah, I think once that happened, it was just like everyone was being like regulated on their house shows. Like, and then everything was shutting down. And I'm hoping like maybe we'll start doing more in Nashville for that, just because I feel like there is kind of a lack of venues compared to what we used to have.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
So even
lack of DIY venues or just accessible venues in general?
It's like I book a lot of shows. So when I am trying to see if like a date is available or something, everything is booked up so fast.
Yeah.
Because there's less venues. So everyone has holds like farther in advance now.
Right. I feel like there's more venues than ever, but there's more people too, like 10 times more people.
Yeah. I think that is
like,
also
for my experience. And I'm not looking at, not that I'm booking big shows or trying to put myself on that level at all, but I'm saying like I can go to 5 spot and it is months out, you know, like it's really far out. Mercy Lounge is really far out. Dark Matter is starting to get that way. Like,
very
it was almost
far
that
out.
Way right off the bat when they opened.
Exactly.
Which is great. I mean, they're booking phenomenal shows. I think most of those venues are doing well. I don't know. Maybe they are not the smaller size venues. Maybe I'm just not thinking about the scale correctly.
Yeah, when I book shows, it's not always going to be like the bigger venues.
It's like a Cobra, right?
Yeah.
Like that size?
Yeah, but even like places like that is like you have to think about production fees. And once a lot of venues shut down and like the Oakland fires happened, a lot of venues raised their production fees, which sometimes like rightfully so, but it was just harder.
Right.
To find things that were that you could book and then know that you were going to make the production fee.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't either, for sure. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts on what DIY, from your perspective, does for a music scene. You cited 4 bands that you had been in. Like, how did the DIY scene sort of benefit that? What's the difference between playing at the Chili Factory and playing at 5 Spot?
Well, each of those bands that I said have had a completely different effect and a completely different idea of DIY because of it. I mean, just like different circumstances. Like when we formed Jaws, I was the oldest and I was 15.
Right.
So
it was accessibility for you.
Yeah,
there was no other option.
There was no other option than like, we need to do this for ourselves because no one else is going to do it for us. And then with Dreamwave, I mean, like Kelton kind of came as an outsider in general, just like all of a sudden started showing up at shows and stuff. I went to middle school with him, so I had already known him. But also, being a person of color in a majority white scene, that's not the easiest thing to navigate, especially when it comes to, like, at that time period, that was not a very much talked about thing either.
Yeah. Which is still, I think, probably a legit issue.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, it's good that we're able to discuss it and kind of take it on head on, but it's still majority white, like by a large margin.
Yeah. And then even with Soccer Mommy, I feel like a lot of, at first, like her, I know for a fact that a lot of the people, like a lot of the bros in the scene or whatever were not taking her music seriously, and like we're not taking her seriously, and that sucks because Sophie makes such amazing music and she's such an amazing songwriter and guitar player. Mm-hmm. Just because she's like a girl, they don't really take that seriously. It's worked out okay for her. Yeah, for yeah. sure.
She played Pitchfork like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
so
she's playing.
She proved him wrong.
Yeah,
she's playing the Grand Ole Opry with Wilco coming up.
Saw that.
Yeah, it's
announced
amazing.
Today. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, that's fantastic. What about you, Megan? How do you feel about the DIY scene and how it kind of incubates the scene?
So when I first started going to shows, I wasn't 21, obviously. So a lot of venues in Nashville are before like Dark Matter, this new Dark Matter and everything. There weren't really like all ages venues. A lot of things in Nashville were like 21 and up. Mm-hmm. So I was like 19, 18, 19 when I was really getting into the scene. And yeah, I wanted to be at more things, but you know, I didn't have a fake ID at the time. yeah, but it was like, well, it was also part of it is like I actually got a fake ID to work 21 and up shows.
Oh.
I'm not lying for things like that because, you know, I was booking them, but if I couldn't go to them,
right,
that was an issue.
Yeah. I tried to book dancers for a show and
I remember that issue
that there were members of the band that were not 21 yet. So they like couldn't play Five Spot.
Yeah. There was a time where I booked Atlanta band Lunar Vacation at Five Spot actually. And
they couldn't even
come inside. Like they had to sit outside before they played.
Right.
And then after. So it's like,
which I mean, that's not hating on Five Spot.
Yeah, exactly. No, like they're doing their job. It's just like you have to think about that, and then you sometimes just don't realize like accessibility of that. But yeah, I think DIY for me when I first started was like all ages, like house shows, and that's like where you got most all ages shows were at house shows. I don't know.
No, I'm smiling over here because I have another thought that I wanted to ask you both about the purity of DIY and get your thoughts on, you know, I feel like when you're 15, 16, 18, you are making music because there's this thing in you that's like, I want to write songs. I want to make these things. I want to express myself in these ways. And when you're 26, 27, you're like, I need to put my album out to get publishing rights and to get licensing. And like there's this business kind of comes into it, which like is kind of inevitable if you're going to be a musician for a long enough period of time. Mm-hmm. But there's a kind of a purity to making music when you're younger that isn't driven by business per se. And I'm curious if you kind of had that experience yourselves.
Booking shows for me and like where I started in DIY was purely for the love of it. I mean, I studied music business, so it is like, and I do have a music business job full time. But I mean, it always felt like not necessarily a hobby. It was just like, that's what I did for fun.
Right.
It's like I would go home and book shows. And then at the beginning of it, I was going to shows like almost every night of the week, running door for them. And I was booking them like several times a month. And that's what I did for fun for a long time.
Yeah.
Now it's harder, I guess, just being an adult and finding the time to do all that. But it is very much still what I do for fun. So I have found like a lot more of the work that I do in like music business and stuff. It's harder. And then you do make something you love work. So that's like the downfall is like this thing that was your hobby is now your job. And now you like sometimes you like get very stressed out about it. And you're like, actually, you have to like remember how much you love it and like the purity of it all. But I still very much see like the like 18-year-old, 19-year-old me that started going to shows. I still like get that feeling when I go to shows. But now I just know almost everyone at the show. when I started, I knew absolutely no one.
Right.
And I was just like, I was like this young, like little blonde girl and then booking like 30-year-old dudes in bands at like 21 and up venues. So it was very much, it was weird.
I promise the 30-year-old dudes were appreciative.
That's not a bash on 30-year-old dudes.
Of being included in something cool.
Yeah.
You know, at some point you're like, I want to be in with that group. How do I get in with the kids? Like, it's tough. What about yourself? Did you feel like there was a purity of the DIY experience that was just about creativity?
Yeah, creativity and also like frustration as well. Like, I mean, coming from a kind of punk background, like that was just like a creative outlet for all of our frustrations and whatnot. Yeah, there was a purity of it. Like, we never saw shows as like a business platform or anything like that, or we never saw recording as a business platform or anything. We were just like, show this Saturday or Thursday, that's what we're doing that night. That's where all of our friends are going to be, and it's going to be great, and it's going to be such a fun time, and our other friends' bands are going to play, and it's going to be awesome. And then, like, even just, like, kind of the naivety of scene politics at the time is, like, a whole different realm that you could get into there, because that's something I really did not even start to comprehend until I was around the age of 18.
Do you feel like there's scene politics now?
Yes.
That you encounter? I feel like there's such an inclusiveness to a lot of what's happening in the scene. Do you feel like there's definitely, like, lines that are drawn? Like,
I feel like even in, like, the past year that a lot of people have worked really hard to, like, make it more inclusive, and we are seeing that now, especially with all ages venues coming up. And I think that is, like, where DIY is going, is, like, more inclusivity and all ages and things like that. And, like, making sure that you have people of color and women on a bill. Mm-hmm. I feel like, well, most people I know booking in Nashville have done a lot better of a job doing that, and I make it a point to do that as well. So I think it is very much more inclusive. I forgot what the question was.
Scene politics.
Scene politics, yes. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a lot better, but there's still issues with that, of course.
Yeah, of course. So. Ongoing battle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I just also feel like there was such, like, from the older people, there was so much just kind of, like, almost, like, shielded or hidden from us when we were young. Just, like, they didn't want us to know, like, some person is, like, a bad person or something like that. So they just kind of, like, fade away or something like that.
Interesting.
But they didn't want us to know, so we wouldn't feel, like, unsafe around or anything like that. And
I mean,
growing, you see a lot more of that. It's like, oh, that is a terrible person. Okay. And it's like, how much of this was going on when I was young?
Right.
And that they didn't tell us because we were young, and they didn't want us to, like, feel like a certain way.
Well, very much now is, like, people make it a point to not book bands that have, like, abusers in them, which I don't think wasn't as common, like, several years ago. But now, like, people have, like, a list of people that you shouldn't book because, you know, they're known abusers and things like that. So that is a lot of the scene politics too, is, like, knowing not who not to, like, work with because they're an abuser, and knowing, like, not who to put on, like, not to put them on a show, or, like, not to release their record and things like that. And that very much gets involved, and that's a lot of the scene politics now, I think, too.
I don't know. That sounds like an extremely positive thing.
Yes, it definitely is. It's amazing.
It definitely is.
When I hear scene politics, I'm like, oh, drama between, you know, these factions. But, like, if there's a known abuser, like, put up a wall. That's
but that
okay.
just was exactly. not a thing for so long, at least in the, like, larger zeitgeist.
Yeah, I can definitely think of instances myself from bands, you know, within the last 6 years, where, like, knowing what I know now about them, I'm like, I can't believe they were booked. Like, it's crazy. It's awful. So anyone booking shows out there, get that list and don't book those people. For sure. But, okay, this conversation about DIY lends itself very well to the transition of starting a record label.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you start a record label, and how?
So we started Nashville Show to Go Menu together.
Ah, yes.
Almost a year ago. So it was
next month.
Let me, just for everyone out there, Nashville Show to Go Menu. I think I just call it Nashville Show to Go.
But it's
a menu. Incredible, succinct list of shows to see in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a Facebook and an Instagram. I don't know if you're on Twitter or not. And you follow them. And every Sunday, there is a new list of, here's what you do this week. Like, here's the shows. If there's three shows on Monday that you have filtered to deem to be worthwhile, go see those. If there's one on Tuesday, it's there. And each, like, slide on Instagram kind of has its own image.
Yes. We do have a physical menu as well that we distribute to, like, local businesses.
Right. So it's legit great. I mean, it's amazing. I can't.
Happy to hear that.
As someone that, like, combs through, you know, show listings and tries to add stuff to the We Own This Town site, I'm like, how are you keeping up with this? Like, I get overwhelmed, and it's just like, when I look at your listings, I'm like, oh, these are legitimately all very good shows. Like, they did it. They found all the good shows. It's great. It's awesome. So thank you very much for that resource. For those of you that don't follow it, please do follow it. And then also go to the shows.
Yeah,
that
are that's the most important part. Actually go to them. It means nothing if no one's going to the shows.
I mean, you can't go out 7 days a week, but if you have a free night and you're looking to go out, this is the resource to reference to find out where to go. So you started that. Why? Why did you start this?
What's funny about it is one of my coworkers came up to me one day and was like, I don't have time to do this, but I have this idea. And I know that you know a lot of shows. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I know that you could do it. And then I know this person that you should also work with. And he also texted Jacob here, yeah, and knows both of us. And was like, you guys should work together on this. Like, just an idea. Like, you don't have to do it, but I think it would be really cool to have this resource. His name is Cam Sarrett. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that on this.
Give some credit.
Thank you, Cam. But I also paired it with doing a school project. So perfect. I had more motivation. It just so happened that I was in a digital strategies class and I had to create a page and then promote as like a promotion class. So it paired perfectly, like just the right timing. So yeah, me and Jacob met up and I don't know. It just happened from there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I had been wanting to do something like that for years because throughout high school, or not even throughout high school, but for the first half of high school, me and my friends all followed Nashville's Dead pretty religiously.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
And, that was a weekly, it was a blog that was also, they would post the rundown and it was like all the cool kind of independent shows that were happening in town. And it kept going on for a while, but after unfortunately Ben's passing, it didn't really like,
right,
continue on.
Right, he's like the heart of the
exactly
project. Yeah.
It was him and David's project. So I could feel such a lull in show attendance happening over the last like 2 or 3 years, especially after the Oakland Fire, because at the Oakland Fire, honestly, that was the height of DIY and young attendance I had ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just like in any given night, like hundreds of kids just out.
Everyone
at this local show.
Jeez. And hundreds.
Yeah.
I mean, I completely believe you. That's just incredible.
It was amazing.
That's an amazing attendance number.
But then after that, it just like severed, and then you're lucky to get like 15
right
at your show or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had been wanting to do that for a very long time, and then Cam texted me out of the blue one day, and he was like, I know that we've talked about this before, and I can't really do it with you, but I think Megan would be a really good partner in crime for this. And I was like, sure.
So we owe it all to Cam.
We owe it all to Cam.
But what's going on with Cam? Why can't Cam do this?
I don't know. Cam's a busy man.
Cam's an adult.
Come on, Cam.
He is an adult.
Great ideas.
Also,
but
big shout out to JB Williford, who does our graphic designing.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
And
she's another part of that too.
She was also a part of Nashville's Dead.
Yes.
Originally.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it is kind of like a resurgence, I guess, of like Nashville's Dead, but in a different way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Cam came to me and was like, I don't know, maybe like a slideshow every week. And we kind of like ran with it and did our own thing. And then JB does our design and it's amazing. So we're very, very grateful for her.
Yeah.
But yeah, we continue to do it and we're coming up on a year and feels
congratulations
crazy that we've done it for a year.
Yeah.
The hardest part was finding a name.
It was.
Yeah.
I can't remember. What was the original name?
What's the move?
What's the move? We have like a thing that we add our shows to every week, like a calendar, and it's under like a certain like name. So the calendar is called What's the Move. Mm-hmm. So every week I upload them to a calendar called What's the Move. So we never change the name on that.
Nice.
But yeah, the original name was What's the Move.
Yeah, just remember us just like discussed what we wanted it to be and everything at this coffee shop that we met at for the meeting of what this is going to be. And we're like, name.
It took, that was the hardest part.
It's always the hardest part. Yeah.
And then like, I remember just like kind of like rolling around with it for a week. And then I was like, well, what if we do like a physical copy too? And then I remember being at work and seeing like our actual to-go menus and being like, oh,
yeah,
that's not a bad idea right there. It reminds a lot of people of something called show paper that was in New York a while ago. I don't know much about it.
I had someone mention that to me as well, and I was like, I've never heard of
it. Yeah, I don't know anything.
Where
about
all
that
is it carried? What are your local?
You would know more than I would know.
let me see if I can go through the full list. We've got Third Man Records is by far our biggest user of it.
Yeah.
They go through the most stock of it. It's carried at Third Man, it's carried at Two Bits Pizza, it's carried at Bongo Java, it's carried played at sometimes Duke's, depending on if I can get there by opening is the thing. What else is it? Salmon Zoe's, Baja Burrito, Gabby's Burgers and Fries.
Dark Matter.
I'm missing one.
Yeah. Used to be at Ugly Mugs, right?
It used to be at Ugly Mugs. They never really picked them up from there. They never picked them up from Grimey's, and they never picked them up from The Groove. So I stopped that.
Yeah.
Well, for anyone listening out there, if you want to carry this, get in touch with them.
Yes,
and carry
please.
It. I don't know if you have advertising in the printed version. I haven't seen it. You should also get people to pay you to make this because it's awesome.
We are working on a donation-based thing and kind of we actually have a meeting directly when we leave here about
yes, all of those things.
Yes.
So good.
Well, it is like we are definitely like not in it to make money. We just do it because we love it, but also we lose money.
Yeah.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
A lot of endeavors do that, but as someone that is sort of ignorant to a lot of the goings on and also wants to support the local scene, mm-hmm. You give me a subscription option, I get a little piece of paper mailed to me, I'm gonna do it.
I would do that in a heartbeat. I would hand deliver that.
Yeah. You'll just walk it to my house, drop it in the mailbox.
Yeah.
I mean, he like this tapes that he brought you, he hand delivers our tapes that are ordered.
Yeah,
and
if they're in town.
The menus to like businesses as well. So our delivery man is Jacob right here.
Love it. Nashville Show to Go menu. If you have a business or you work at a business, which I assume you work at a business if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Maybe not.
Carry this thing. It's a delightful resource. So back to the original question. Why did you start a record label? You started this Show to Go menu.
Yes. And then one day, Jacob was like, I want to have a meeting. And we met at Mitchell's and like...
Oh, that's another place that carries them.
Yes.
There you go.
Was it... When was that? Was it like February or March of this year?
Yeah, it was either late winter or early spring.
Yeah. Don't remember exactly, but we had a meeting and then I had no idea what it was going to be about. I thought we were just going to talk about to-go menu. But then he was like, I have this idea. I want to start a label. And I know that like you would probably be interested in that too. So, and I was like, yeah, I've actually been thinking about it. But at the time, I was still in school. Mm-hmm. I was still in college, and I was working, and I had an internship, and then I booked shows on the side as
well. A little busy.
So I was a little busy. So it was pretty hard in the beginning, but yeah, we're making it work. We're doing it.
Yeah, doing the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first release, Ivan, Little Lady Number 2, that came out, what, 2 months ago?
In May.
Yep.
Oh, in May. Yeah, 5/31. We went back to the email.
Yes.
Oh, the end
of May. Knew I was right.
So how did you get hooked up with Ivan? Why did you select that as your inaugural release?
I've known Isaac for a couple years now. I remember just seeing a couple of his early sets, like when he was doing solo sets, and being like, okay, that's cool. And then I've like kind of seen him like evolve into this whole different thing. I remember when he put out the first Little Lady, I was pretty amazed by it. And then throughout the last year of his life, he spent pretty reclused making Little Lady Number 2. And I would go over there and I pretty much saw the entire like fruition of it. Like it was something completely different to begin with. And like I just saw that grow and grow and grow. And by the end, I was like, this is really something special. This is amazing. And it is still an album that I cannot compare to literally any other music.
Yeah, it's very hard to describe what it is and like what it sounds like to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. So, and I at the time I had no clue I would be working with Megan on this label or anything like that. I was just like, wow, this is something amazing. Mm-hmm. And then like given the chance, like it just happened to line up that he was getting close to being done around the time we were thinking about starting. And
yeah,
like that would be a great release. So yeah,
excellent. And then Depression Breakfast is the second release. Just recently was released.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah, it's super good. Just fiery punk rock, extremely like politically motivated and just really articulate in its stances, which is just like, I don't know, it's incredible. It's a great record.
Yeah, I'm a huge Depression Breakfast fan. So from the beginning, I was just like, I love this band. Like, they're like Riot Grrrl revival. Like, I love, like, my business card says Riot Grrrl, if anyone wants to know that. So I'm like very much like super excited about it. And I'm friends with Linda and Meg. So Linda, who was working at Dark Matter, maybe in like, I don't know if it was May or June, I don't know, was like, oh, yeah, we just finished recording, or like we're in the process of recording this thing. And would you guys be interested in like putting it out? And I was like, I would love that.
Yeah.
Like immediately I was like, yes, we'll do it. I didn't even ask Jacob. I was like, yeah, we'll do it.
I mean, I've posted so many times that they're my favorite band in town. Yeah. So it's like, that's a no-brainer, yeah. I feel like. I remember seeing them for the first time. I remember because they all, literally every member of the original lineup of Depression Breakfast used to work at JJ's Market.
Yes.
So I went in there, and I believe it was either Linda or Chandler. I don't remember. They were like, hey, we're playing this Belmont party this weekend. Come through. And my friend Walter had showed me like a live video of them before. And I was like, oh, that looks cool. And then I just remember going to that party and being blown away by them. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think the album reflects that for sure. Mm-hmm. You were telling me before we started recording that one of the members has moved away to go to school in Europe. So yes. The band is done or on pause? Or
I'm hoping both? On pause, but I mean, she's going to be in school for a while. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Well, I think the strength, sorry, Meg. You know, I think one of the best parts about the album, like as a Riot Girl album, as a politically motivated album, is that it doesn't matter if they're still a band. Like, the messages in it are so relevant and, like, timely for right now that if you're a 13-year-old stumbling upon this record, it's like, fuck yeah, this is it.
I remember the day we released it, my friend Zoe just messaged me, and she was like, I'm so stoked about this album, and I think it's going to do so much good for, like, the young girls who are coming up in Nashville right now. Mm-hmm. And she was like, it's reminding me of what Bully meant to me when I was in high school. And right. I was like, that's sick. I'm so happy that that can be a service to anyone who feels like maybe they're being maligned or they have to like act a certain way because they are a certain kind of person or something like that.
Yeah, and they like directly addressed sexual assault and then privilege.
Right.
And lots of important topics, and they directly address it in their songs, which is like, I think is incredible. And it's just like, there's no hiding like what it's about. And I just think it really gets the message out there, and I love that about it. So
absolutely, 100% agree. Mm-hmm. So what's next? Can you share?
We have ideas.
We have ideas.
Nothing concrete. So, like, if we were to share, we might just like be lying.
Yes, so. I don't want to be lying.
No, it's fine to lie. It's just a podcast. You can lie.
We're releasing the new Strokes album.
Oh, yeah, amazing. Uh-huh. That's great.
What I like about this is like, I mean, I've worked for like two other record labels. I work for another record label in general as my full-time job, but this one, I just like, you have the freedom to just like whatever you're into or whatever is right. like coming out soon, your friend wants to put out this record, you're like, yeah, I'll do it, like we'll do it. And it's just like, it's very freeing to know that you can just help out with projects. And it, I don't know, it's just very much freedom in it, and I love that. It's more relaxed for me, and it's just, I love it. So
do you think you'll remain focused on local acts?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah, I think we're gonna expand.
Yes,
a little bit.
There, yeah.
I'm chipping
There's
away.
Some opportunity.
I'm chipping away. What the next thing is? I'm chipping away. Well, I think that's it.
Okay.
Right? Does that feel all right?
Sure.
Yeah, I felt good about
it. I really appreciate you all coming in here. I will definitely play both Ivan and Depression Breakfast on the episode.
Sweet.
You know, there's a lot of chatter that we could go into about how you're releasing records and like just the state of the music industry in general.
I mean, one thing I will say is like, we are doing this from the ground up. We're 100% funding this ourselves.
Yes.
And right.
So we are just starting with like cassettes, and then hopefully we'll be able to make at least enough money off of like our releases so far that we can like maybe get into like a higher level of like content, like a 7-inch or an LP or something like that. Like, that's kind of the goal, is just kind of like make this work from the ground up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just us too. So, yeah. I mean, like, we do our own distribution, we do our own, like, publicity, like, when we have a release, like, I do all the, right. the press for that. It's just, yeah, we do it literally all ourselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, hopefully, like...
We print everything at my house.
Yes.
This last run of tapes we made on... Because I had a little bit of a problem with a third-party tape service. They got us the tapes a week and a half late for the Ivan release after the release show. I bought a tape duplicator that goes at 16 times speed and does 7 at a time.
Yeah.
So I literally made all of these in-house.
Yeah.
That is doing it yourself for sure. DIY 100%. Well, I'm excited to keep up with what you're doing. Keep me on your email list, please, and tell me all the things. I will do my best to include them on this show and on the website. And, you know, we'll just keep playing your stuff. I really appreciate you coming in.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. And follow Nashville Show to Go.
Yes.
Both the record label and the menu.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, that was my time with Megan and Jacob of To Go Records and Nashville Show To Go. I highly suggest you check them out on Instagram. They are at To Go Records for the label and at Nashville Show To Go for the listing of events around town. Both are great. Support them, and I think you'll find that you're supporting yourself in the process. Pretty wild. All right, that's it. We'll get back to a music episode next week, but I am always open to interviews. More of these to come. Thank you, Megan. Thank you, Jacob. And thank you all the bands involved with To Go Records and Nashville Show To Go. Hit us up at We Own This Town on the old social networks. That's Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We are not currently on TikTok or Periscope. The music bed for this show is from Upright T-Rex Music. Find them at uprighttrexmusic.com. Thank you for listening. I'll talk at you next time. Bye.